Not going to try and BS you, John. It's 100% hockey with Millard and Shannon. I don't have a handle on this so far.
On the playoffs? Oh, I just thought you were talking about
it. I don't have a handle on it. And I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you otherwise with all kinds of fancy hockey talk.
It is. Anybody can win the Stanley Cup now. Anybody. This is not a case of Colorado as the President's Trophy winner being light years ahead of everybody else. Anybody can win the Stanley Cup. The key thing will be, and we say this every year, there's two keys, goaltending and health. If you have goaltending, you got a chance. If you're healthy after three rounds of playoffs and you get to the Stanley Cup final, if you're healthy, you have a chance. But, I mean, even we're already starting to hear of guys, you know, playing under 100%. And so that's going to be the challenge now, is how do you keep your team as healthy as possible to win games? It's crazy already.
I'll give you an example. I was doing our game, the Golden Knights in Utah, and the Mammoth win their first ever playoff game. But I'm trying to keep track of other action around the league. So I'm following on social media during TV timeouts. And if I just went on the summarization of the game in Colorado and L.A., I would have thought L.A. was up 5-1 in that game last night.
Right.
People were not pleased with what was going on with the Avs and excited about the L.A. Kings, and it ends up being a 2-0 series lead the other way.
And what's happened there is DJ Smith and his coaching staff, which that was as strange as I've ever seen with the glass breaking behind the bench.
Yes.
With 17 minutes to play in the period. If it happened 3 minutes ago in the period, the referee would say, okay, go to your rooms.
Yeah.
And then we can make up the time in the intermission and fix everything. But it made no sense to do it this way. But DJ Smith is now taking advantage of the defensive posture that Jim Hiller put in place. And don't laugh. I mean, they're a very good defensive team. They do a lot of things well structurally on the defensive side of the puck. DJ Smith got the job because under Hiller, they couldn't score goals, and there was no flexibility, and the players are having more fun, but now they're having trouble scoring goals again. But defensively, they are an impressive group of guys. And that's what Colorado has realized, that how good the Kings are keeping the puck out of their own zone, keeping the puck to the outside. You know, there's not much stuff in front of Forsberg. And Forsberg himself is a great story. I mean, who would have told you that at any time, I guess, you know, any time prior to the Olympic break, that Darcy Kuemper wasn't going to be the starter in the playoffs for the LA Kings. Now, Kuemper got hurt just before the Olympics, had a bad concussion, didn't play or practice much during the Olympics, came back and has really struggled. And Forsberg took the opportunity to take over and has been impressive. So look who the goalie is at the other end. In Scott Wedgwood, this was supposed to be Mackenzie Blackwood's net, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So
they wanted it to be.
Yeah. Well, so that series is impressive, but Tampa, Montreal, oh my goodness gracious, Tampa, Montreal, it's like 1981. It's like
that's an insult to 1981. It was vicious. Go back and look at those highlights. You were there. It's
we had bench clearing brawls in 81.
You had bench clearing brawls during warm up in 81.
That was 87. but you know what I mean. I mean the whole. I actually view that this is the residue of Florida Panther hockey having an effect on what you know how John Cooper wants to coach now. But you got to be tough if you can't be fast enough. You got to be tough enough, and that's what's happened in Tampa, and they're dragging Montreal into the mud with them.
And Montreal looks like they're happy in the mud.
Yeah, no, they're having a good time. So it's impressive. Now, if you're the Buffalo Sabres, two bad starts in a row. I mean, in theory, Buffalo, of 120 minutes of hockey, Buffalo's played well for 12 minutes so far. 12 minutes. Boston has been the better team for the most part. But Buffalo has not scored any goals in, you know, the first or second period of either game. And whether they think they can turn it on, which they did in game one and they won, and they tried to turn it on in game two, but it was too little too late. The learning curve for Lindy Ruff's Buffalo Sabres is going to be a fascinating one now, too. Swayman was pretty good last night, though, too.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Did you see the geeky goal?
Yes, but Swayman's stopping everything.
Yeah. Well, he's a good goalie.
He's keeping his team in it back-to-back games where they've been outplayed, and that's what you have to do if you're the underdog. And the other guy lets one in from center ice.
Yeah. Okay, so they've got a few days to wait.
I don't know. I might switch it. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah. Alec Lyon has done a really good job in Buffalo this season, bailing them out of situations, particularly early in the year. So now I think, and do you take the tact that are we worried about the future or are we worried about right now?
No, you're worried about right now.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Because if you don't play Luukkonen, do you lose Luukkonen? That becomes the question. Or
we're going to talk to a guy that put his team on the hot seat. And by all accounts, I think we agree. Maybe the timing wasn't perfect, but right at the end of the year, maybe it could have been three games before, but I loved it. Why can't you hold players accountable no matter what position they're in?
Yeah. Well, you should.
What's Luukkonen going to do? What is he going to quit? Not going to quit. He's going to come back and he's got to be better next year and be better at the crucial times.
Or is he going to demand a trade? Because this isn't 2026 and players sulk.
All right, demand a trade. We don't have to trade you.
Then you don't want to play him. Mind you, they have some pretty good goaltenders in the system.
They do.
Too. So, I bet you they go back with Luukkonen in Boston for game three.
I don't know why goaltenders are always treated differently than skaters.
Because you guys are weird.
There's no reason why they should be treated that much differently.
Well,
you let in a goal from center ice with your team trailing. And there's bad bounces, yes, but you can't let that happen to your team at that moment.
So
I would have pulled them right then.
Oh, that would have been devastating. You can't pull them then.
Look. I'm not out for a walk in the park here to smell the flowers.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. You're on fire this morning. What is that? I'm usually the crabby Joe. What is going on?
Well, it's disappointing. There's so much fun and excitement and enthusiasm around the Buffalo Sabres right now. And that group hasn't given the people that have stood by them for 14 years, 15 years now, anything to really cheer about. They had a little rally, but the rest of it has just been holding on to going,
oh no,
how bad is this going to get?
Well, but they're showing their youthful inexperience.
Yeah. Inexperience. You're right. There's Anaheim, Utah. There's a few teams that are in that first step of the journey, to get into, playoff relevance, and there's why people, that's why people put so much value on experience.
By the way, does anybody shoot the puck harder than Dylan Gunther?
Tage Thompson. Dylan Gunther scored a one-timer last night off a feed from Kyle Yamamoto. Good to see him. Yeah. And everybody in the rink stopped.
Yeah.
And went, that one, that go in. Number two was, whoa. You could almost see it in Carter Hart going, well, that got there in a hurry.
Yeah. No. We've seen it before. If you've watched any Mammoth games this year, his shot is remarkable, and that's why he's a 40-goal scorer. But last night on that stage, boy, oh, boy, what a shot.
He had a couple of big influential plays in the game. Vegas just got to stop the bad bounces going in on them. That's okay. But it's 1-1 and going to Salt Lake City. And that place is, we got 2 days between games. And I'm really looking forward to the spectacle of the first playoff game in Salt Lake City.
Did you see the owner there last night? Did you see Ryan?
Not see the owner last night. Saw him in game number one, but did not. Yeah. You know who I was hanging out with last night?
Gary Lawless.
Well, he was there too.
Okay.
Nate Bargatze.
No.
He came and hung out with me on the pregame show.
Did you have Nate on the show? When Nate was on the show?
Yeah, for about 5-6 minutes, and we just had a good old hangout.
Did you get his tickets?
Did I get us tickets? No, to his world tour, the Big Eyes tour. Did not. But I think if you want to go, I think I can set you up.
I want to go.
I think
Nate's in Buffalo.
Oh. Yeah, he's. I think he's in Sioux Falls or Sioux City, and then he's in Fargo. As he said, he's hitting all the hot spots. Really getting into it.
No offense to
Fargo.
Fargo, North Dakota. By the way, I love Fargo. I had my muffler changed in Fargo once. It was fantastic.
That Fargo, Grand Forks. I'm a big UND guy. The way he handles himself, I know this is 100% hockey, but he was at a hockey game last night. The way Nate Bargatze handles himself one-on-one with somebody he doesn't know is inspiring. He was as friendly, knew names, knew my name, everything, right on through, being appreciative at the end. And this guy's done Saturday Night Live. He's done College Game Day. He's done all the big ones. And he's on with me in a pregame show before a Stanley Cup playoff game and couldn't have been more involved in the conversation.
And is he a hockey fan?
He is. He didn't grow up with the game. As he said, he played church basketball on a carpet court. that was his athletics. He said they didn't have church hockey back then in Nashville. But he is. He knows Jeremy Lauzon and Sissons and Cole Smith from the Nashville days.
So all the kids that played in Nashville, he knows.
Yeah. Well, he that's who the guys he was aware of on our team. Kind of like he's.
Did he call you Darren? But he called you by name. Hi, Darren. How are you doing, Darren?
Before we went on, he's like, "Thanks for doing this, Darren. Thanks for having me on, Darren."
Wow.
Like, so he was aware enough to either his people told him or Gary Lawless, Darren Elliott, same thing when they left the set. Across, he knew all three guys' names on the show, not just the guy that was going to be talking to him. So think about that. If you're having a bad day and you don't want to talk to somebody or somebody asks you a favor, like Nate Bargatze can be above and beyond.
And the other thing is if there's any hockey players listening or watching this podcast, which I doubt, that little thing, and I've told this story multiple times, that little thing about at the end of an interview, whoever's talking to you, if you say their name, It gives you credibility. It gives the guy credibility, and people at home say, "Wow, I just saw two friends speak," that kind of thing goes a mile in creating a positive perception of an interview.
It was one of those conversations where you got your prep, what you might get to, what you'd like to get to. I didn't look at it once. It just turned into a conversation with them.
Did you try to be funny?
Nope. Not with comedians. No, I try to be funny a lot of times, but not with comedians.
Of course, you've known my favorite line. If you were supposed to be funny, you'd be working in Vegas. You're working in Vegas. You're not that funny. Okay. You're not that funny.
But I've watched enough Bill Burr.
Oh, yeah. He's on a YouTube. He's a hockey fan.
When Bill Burr goes on like morning shows or does podcasts and people try to be funny with him and he eviscerates them. So I don't do the with comedians. I don't try to be funny.
Okay.
I wouldn't try to beat Jack Eichel in a skate race.
No. What about
I might be
Rick
funny
Bonus?
With Jack Eichel and I might try and beat Nate Bargatze in a skate race, but I wouldn't do it the other way.
What about, have you ever tried to beat Rick Bonus?
In anything? Nope.
No.
But certainly not in passion.
No. No.
Rick Bonus is going to join us. I've been looking forward to this. But I got a notice here like 2 minutes ago. I was hoping to drag this out a little bit because I got somebody coming to the door. If I'm not back, just start without me.
I'll start without you.
And I'll pick up with you half a little bit through.
Okay.
But don't ask all the good questions. I got a couple of things I want to talk to him about.
Well, you know, the last time, I'm going to remind him, the last time he was on the show, he got a job 2 days later and he didn't tell us. So didn't give us the scoop. Boat. We need a scoop.
You might just get one.
I don't
see how it have the sun shining on Rick Bonus today. It's 100% hockey with Millard and Shannon hanging out with all the big dogs.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Welcome back to the podcast. Ballard will be back in a moment. Joined by the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Rick Bonus. And I'm told from a good source, you're going to coach for just one more year. Is that true?
Well, yeah, it might be longer than that, but it might be. We'll see how it all goes. But yeah, we've agreed to a one-year deal. And yeah, it could have been a couple of more, but at this stage, let's just take it 1 year at a time. If it goes great next year and I feel up to it, then we'll keep going at it. But for sure, one more year. We're looking very much forward to that.
You're old enough to remember the great Walter Alston, who managed the Los Angeles Dodgers. And Walter Alston did 30 one-year contracts.
Wow. Being good for him. That's confidence in himself. And he knew how far he could push himself.
Yeah. Okay. Now, speaking of pushing, I can't help wait any longer to ask you about your end-of-season press conference. Do you regret anything now, or is everything status quo with what you thought? Have you talked to the players?
Oh, yeah. There's no problem with the players. Listen, they understand where I'm coming from. You know, they don't like hearing those things, but they also understand it's coming from passion. It's coming from the desire to see the organization, the whole organization, do better. They've made the playoffs 6 years out of 25. They've won one round in 25. So we've got to up the standards there. There's no question. And that starts with me. You know, we didn't finish the year well, and that's on me. I'm the head coach and I take responsibility for that, but it's also on the players. We didn't finish well. There's games we should have won. We didn't, because maybe we didn't bear down. But you know, at the end of that, John, you got to remember there are a couple of things here. There's nothing wrong with the players going home uncomfortable. Right. There's nothing wrong with that. I didn't want the players to go home and say, okay, well, we made improvements from last year. We came close again. Like that's just not good enough. It's not. So to make them a little bit uncomfortable, leaving the city and for the summer, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But the other thing, and no one talks about that, at the end of the rant, I said, you know, there's some of these players are very lucky there's no game tomorrow. So we certainly was not painting the whole group with that brush. Yeah, there's a couple of guys that I was trying to get across to. The other players know who they are. But the culture is not as bad as I made it out to sound to be. But that being said, it has to get a lot better. Like, we've got to demand more from ourselves. And that starts with me as the head coach. And then it goes on to the players. And they've got to accept responsibility for all that as well. So, you know, if you take the whole picture of the big picture of the whole thing, going home uncomfortable for all of us is a good thing. Keep us motivated, keep us focused going into training camp. Again, the culture's not as bad as I made it sound to be. But again, that being said, it has to get better. It does. Coming close is just not good enough. So a little push. Again, it makes, you know, do they like hearing it? No. Did anyone push back at me? No. They know they've got to be better. So it's a great group in terms of that. But again, we all know, me included, we all have to be better next year.
This was so similar to what we saw with you after that series in Vegas in your first year in Winnipeg. Are there comparables?
I think it's different scenarios. That series, we just, that had led up over the last couple of months, that going into that ramp, because you remember how up and down we were. We were going great, and then we went in the tank for a couple of months. So that was directed more at the whole thing the last couple of months. This was really, this again, just trying to push everyone to raise the standards. So again, six years in the playoffs and 25, we all have to do better than that. We're the group that has been entitled to, given the opportunity to turn that thing around, and we're going to. But it was the last 12 games. Could we have won three or four of them if we had scored some goals? Yeah. But did we play hard enough in those games to make that happen? And the answer is no.
So can you explain, when you look at by the way, the last time you did this podcast, 2 days later, you took the job. It was 2 days after, I got to tell you that morning that you took the job, I got about 5 texts saying, "Wow, what about Rick Bowness?" And I thought people were complimenting us on the podcast. We don't get many compliments around here, so I figured they were complimenting us on what a great podcast you had given us.
No one was as shocked as I was when I got that call and took that job. So trust me, I came out of the blue.
So the high of what you did the first 18 or 19 games and the low of what you did the last 12, how do you explain that?
Well, again, we just lost our mojo a little bit, honestly. We had some games where we dominated, didn't score, and lost the games. And then that kind of, now all of a sudden the guys are saying, okay, we got to try something different in their heads, I think. And we just got away from our team game, really. We got away from the things that were making us successful, and we did. And every team faces injuries. We do. We lost a couple of guys that we really couldn't afford to lose. Olivier on right wing, who's a much better player than people realize. Damon Severson was playing his best hockey of his career, playing with Zach Werenski. So we lost a couple of key guys. Now, that being said, did we do a good enough job filling those roles? No, we didn't. And it started with that. But again, those games where you're playing well and you walk away. And even after those games, I said to the guys, look, I'll live with that effort. I'll live with all that. I mean, we played great. Their goalie was outstanding. Give them credit. Do we have to bear down? Do we have to make it harder for them? Absolutely. And I think that's what we missed out on that. And I think that's just started the downside a little bit. But if you look, like the last three games to go in the season, we went into Montreal and played an outstanding game. We won 5-2. Then we come back the next night against Boston. They sit out a couple of guys, and we lose 3-2 late. And their fourth line scored all 3 goals. So those are the things. Like that's what really hurt us a lot.
And that Bruin collapse to me was the one that I'm sure it tweaked you to something. But watching that collapse
you're talking about two different games though. We had played the Bruins 10 days earlier. Oh, we had one that we were up 3-0, and then we took a couple of dumb penalties late in the game, and that really hurt us. And you're absolutely right that game really hurt us. But two different scenarios. That game. Yeah, again, that's another problem with the team over the last little bit. We were taking way too many careless stick penalties in the third period when the games were on the line. And that game you're referencing is the perfect example. We had a 3-1 lead, take a penalty. They get a power play goal. A minute to go, we take another penalty. Now it's a 6-on-4, and they score with 11 seconds to go to tie it up, and we lose in the shootout. But that's right, John. That's a perfect example of what went wrong. Kind of self-inflicted, and penalties and the lack of scoring really hurt us a lot in the going down the stretch.
I've got to wonder, after all the coach, you're going to be, I think, over 2,800 games next year.
Yeah.
why would you come back? I mean, what's in your DNA that says I have to be behind a bench?
Good question.
Seriously.
Hi, Darren. Nice to see you.
Hey, Bones.
You know, it's funny. We got a one call last year, and then I just wasn't ready to go. So I said, no, I'm not interested in pursuing that. And then this year, Judy and I were talking in October, and she said, well, what are you going to do if someone calls this year? And I said, I guess it would depend on who the caller is and the team and the whole situation. But I also knew, well, if I sat out the entire year again, there was no chance to come back. And trust me when I tell you this, Judy missed it more and more than I did. She missed it a lot more than I did. She couldn't. But I said to her, you know, you want to go to Columbus and finish the year? It wasn't, okay, where are we going to live? What's going to happen? She said, let's go, like right away. So she missed as much as I did. But I knew it would be my last chance probably to coach. And I guess the itch came back when I was talking to Don. You know what? I do miss it. And as I've told you many times, thing I missed the most was just working with the players on that day-to-day basis and building relationships with them and helping them become better players, helping them become grow as men. And I really, really missed that challenge. So it really wasn't so much the bench as it was that interaction with the players on a daily basis. And I really, really enjoyed it. That's why we're coming back this year. And the other reason we're coming back is I didn't like how we finished the year, and I'm not leaving like that. So we're going to come back for another year. But I did miss it, John, and I guess I didn't realize it until that opportunity came up.
Well, I thought we had converted you to a TV guy, and you were liking your time at TNT, and you know, there's little or no stress in television compared to coaching. I figured you realized that you had the secret elixir.
Yeah, no, I did miss it. So yeah, here we go again. And I know I signed up for another year, and maybe I keep telling everybody one more year, and they keep saying, yeah, we've heard that before. So.
When you told your kids, what did they say?
Are you nuts? No, they did. Why are you doing this, Dad? Like, really, they all said this. Why? I said, well, I miss it. You know, I'm only 71, so I get an opportunity to keep doing this. Is all I know, and this is who I am. It's not what I do, but this is who I am, and I love it. I still love everything, even though I get criticized and second guessed and everything else. I still love it. So, you know what? It's a great opportunity to continue to do what I've done my entire life, stay involved in the National Hockey League, and I still love every day of it. Even that when you're losing and you're frustrated with the guys and all that stuff that comes with it, you wake up and you can't get to the rink. And I've always told Judy that when the day I wake up and I don't want to go and I don't want to deal with that, you know, that's what I know I'll leave forever. But you got to remember, when we left Winnipeg, it was more, it was health related. It wasn't that I was tired of coaching. It wasn't that I was fed up and I wanted to move on. You know, we had the health issues, so we had to get that in check, and which we did the year prior to this year. So, and this is a long story, but that's why we're back at it and still loving it.
So before I let Darren ask a question, cause he's late, Zach Roenske.
Yeah.
This is your stage to make a case for him to be the Norris Trophy winner.
Well, I'll tell you what, we all know he's an excellent player. He's an elite player. He does. What you do notice about him when you're watching him every day and in every game, like, he has that innate ability to slow the game down when it needs to be slowed down. He'll grab the puck and he'll take it back and he'll wait and just let the game slow down a little bit. He also knows, has that ability to jump up at the right time and make the game play faster. So he's got that feel for the game that he can slow it down when, okay, things are getting a little hectic out there, make the easy play, flip pucks out, bring it back behind the net, make everybody stop, like the little details like that. That control the pace of the game. He's very, very good at that. And he's got the green light, so he knows when to go, when not to go. He's got a tremendous release, as you see. He can shoot on the fly, catches a lot of goalies by surprise because he has the release of a high-scoring forward when he's moving down into the slot area or down the half wall. He's got that great release. But just an elite player. And he again, better defensively than he give him credit for. And yeah, obviously his offensive numbers speak for himself. But wonderful player. He is elite. There's no question.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is the first this is the smoothest 15 minutes we've had on the podcast all season because the host was really good and asking great questions. We'll take a break and let the old host take over on 100% Hockey.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
I understand it was a really good first half.
You're
happy
half.
With it?
Oh, yeah. We're good. John's good. John's easy to talk to. We're all good.
Werenski, yeah, I just caught a little bit of it. Is it tough to play a system with him?
No. He caught on at the end with the two. We had to make some changes to the defensive zone coverage, a couple little tweaks on the forecheck, but he picked it up right away. He's got a good hockey IQ. The changes we made, there was no issue there whatsoever. Again, when you have that hockey IQ and you have a good feel for the pace of the game, you can adjust to anything. And again, when you're talking systems, you're not talking major changes. You're talking, minor adjustments, making a couple of them, but he picked them up right away.
Just pick up on, I know you guys talked about the way the season ended, but when you were going through that, when did you realize you were going to go viral?
on the press conference.
When you were at the podium.
On the press conference, right after the game. Like, yeah, it was really disappointing because we had talked about, okay, let's finish this season on a high note. The fans, we've got tremendous fan support here. Let's send them home with a smile on their face. And we went out and we just played an awful game. There wasn't one really positive thing about that game. And that was very, very frustrating. So that was the accumulation of what had gone on over the last couple of weeks. So, what we talked about earlier with John, but there's nothing wrong with sending a message to your players and everyone in the organization. Okay. We've got to start getting uncomfortable here, right? We do. And so, again, trying to get that team in the playoffs only 6 times out of 25 years, something's got to change here. We got to change something. So to send the players home and they're going home, oh, well, we made some improvements this year. We were close again. That's not good enough. It's just not. So to send them home and make them a little uncomfortable, and that's what they all said to us, me, at the end of their meetings, and none of them had any real issues with it. No one likes to hear that, and I get that. But as I told the players many times, and I said the same thing in Winnipeg, I'm not looking for another job. I'm not, right? So I'm at the end, and I don't worry about getting another job. So I can do and say pretty much anything that I want, right?
That's old man syndrome, Rick. That's old man syndrome.
But that's okay. That's where we are in life, and they got to understand that I'm not worried about, and I'm not 40 years old worried about my career. And so I'm going to do and say things that, you might not like, but if I think they should be said, they're going to be said, and I'll get criticized for it. And I get that. But again, that's fine. That comes with the territory. You can't be afraid to step out of your own comfort zone, right? You can't be afraid of that. And you can't be afraid to lay it all out there and deal with it. And I'd rather do that than, hold it in and deal with it in September. So by then it's all forgotten. Now it's a little uncomfortable for all of us. And, I'm the head coach. That failure at the end, man, that's a lot on me. But it's also on the players. And we've got to share that responsibility. So, that was kind of the message. And, again, I was telling John earlier, the culture isn't as bad as I made it sound. But that being said, it has to get better. We have to hate losing. We have to give a little bit more. And if you give a little bit more and you still lose, okay, at least you know you gave everything you could out there. And that really was the gist of the message at the end of the year.
How well did you know Don Waddell before this?
I've known Don a long time. Actually, he hired Ryan back in the Atlanta Thrashers days. He hired Ryan as an intern, but I've known Don a long time, and I had, you know, again, I've always loved going into Columbus. Really, it's a great city, and they have a tremendous fan base. And as you know, if you've been to games there, it's always a great atmosphere. So I just kind of, it just seemed to fit, and we're very happy that we made that move.
Is there an area your team has to get better beyond the psychological part?
No, well, we just have to get harder, and we do. And when the games get hard, you've got to respond. You can't get pushed out of games, and you got to score greasy goals, and you got to get into the net and get there. You can't be on the perimeter. So it's more of that. We just have to learn in a 2-1 game how to play harder, or when you're down 2-1, how to go get that greasy goal and get your nose dirty. Those are the little details that matter, especially late in the season. So you send that message that I did, but now we start in training camp. This is what we're talking about. You can't get away with this stuff in March and April in the playoffs. So we can go right into camp, right into October, which we did in Winnipeg in November, saying, okay, you can't do this stuff in the playoffs. You can't do this stuff. You're not going to get away with it in March and April. Now they have that reference point. Now they'll know what I'm talking about, that they've lived through it.
You know, you mentioned earlier that losing Matthew Olivier, who I think is the toughest guy in the NHL, pound for pound, really affected things. But that leads me to where the playoffs are. This is the toughest version of hockey in the playoffs I've seen in a long time, Rick. Was that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I just watched that first period of Montreal and Tampa. Man, that was war. But that's what it is. So I've been texting all the young players on our team. I want you watching these games. I want you watching Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. They go hard. That's playoff hockey. That's where we have to get to. And it is. You're right. It's more physical. Now, if you watch that Tampa-Montreal game, there's no way you can play 60 minutes like that. There's absolutely no way. But they came out and they sent a message, each team in the first period. And then they started to play hockey. You watch that Philadelphia game. Philadelphia is big, fast, and physical. And they're making it so hard for the Penguins to get going, Pittsburgh to get going. But that's playoff hockey. But you're absolutely right. This has been more physical, more confrontational, more scrums, more pushing and shoving than I've seen in a long time. But that's first-round hockey, right? It is. And it's a great lesson for all our young players to be watching this and learn from it. This is what we're talking about when we say we've got to get harder.
I didn't think you could try and intimidate, or people would try and intimidate anymore, but we're seeing it right now, especially between the whistles and what's happening during that course of action. Do you think you can play an older brand hockey, or do you still need all that speed?
You have to have speed today. The game's getting faster and faster every year, and you have to have speed. But speed causes turnovers. Speed causes pressure, and it causes more physical play because you can get up there and you're not late. So usually that's what causes all these confrontations, that the speed is picked up and the puck is there and you're getting there at the same time as the other guy. So that goes hand in hand. If you can't get there, there's no physical play. You've got to be able to get there to create that physical play. Mm. So the speed certainly comes into play.
I mean, the amazing thing, 7 of the 8 series are and people in Edmonton and Anaheim are going to say you're crazy because it's physical too, but there are 7 series that are absolutely, absolutely on the edge every night. I mean, whether it's Brady Tkachuk in Ottawa or what we saw it in Colorado last night. It's crazy how physical things are.
Yeah, this first round is always the toughest to get through. The people will tell you that, and it is. And you got to be ready to answer the bell now. You know, Tampa's going into Montreal tomorrow night. They got to be ready to answer the bell. They've got to be able to push back. Those are the games, and you can see the attitude of all these teams involved. They're not letting themselves get pushed out of that game, and that's why all these scrums and these confrontations, no one's backing down. Everyone's in each other's face, and they're sending a message that you're not going to push us out of this game. You're not going to intimidate us. We're coming here. We're going to keep coming at you. So you give the players a ton of credit because that's a hard way to play the game for 60 minutes. But, man, I don't see anyone backing off in all those series you're talking about. No. It's great hockey. It's exciting hockey. All these scrums, you'd like to see, you know, get rid of the scrums. because they're, you know, pushing and shoving after every game, after every whistle. Get rid of those. But, man, you want your players to send that message that we're here to play and we're not getting, you're not going to intimidate us and you're not pushing us out of this game.
The residual effect of Ottawa losing another game, but this one double overtime, the residual effect, how does that affect a team going forward in the series? If it was 1-1, that's one thing because both teams are tired. But when you look at your team and now you're 0-2, how do you manage that behind the bench? How does Travis have to face what goes on because he knows his team has played well, but not well enough to win?
Well, you know, so have they created enough offense to win? I think they have. So sometimes you tip your hat to the goalie and you go in right after the game. We played a great game tonight. It didn't go our way. We don't have to make any real major changes. Just keep doing what you're doing. And that's Travis. That team is well coached and he's done a great job. And I think I'm sure he's very positive. He's going to show all the positive video, all the good things they're doing. Some nights you play really well. You just don't win and you tip your hat to the goaltender or the breaks of the game. That happens. You look at Montreal last night, they hit the goalpost, right? In that power play, less than a minute to go in the game. That goes in. That series is up 2-0. It hits the post. It goes out. Tampa comes back. That's how close it is. So I'm sure Travis is encouraging all the positive things they've done. And that's why they went to double overtime. You go to double overtime, you're not doing a whole lot wrong. You're hanging in there. And you just got to hope you bury some of those chances. But I watch Ottawa. They're going to the net. They're doing all the things necessary. Some nights it just doesn't go your way. Sometimes it doesn't go your way because you don't deserve it to go your way. And there's other games like the last one. Definitely could have won that game. And I'm sure he's just stressing all the positive things that he is seeing. And the players know. The players themselves know we could have won that game. We played hard. We did a lot of good things. They know deep in their heart. And it's one game at a time. The old cliches start coming out now. But that's really what it is. They keep doing what they're doing. If they play tonight like they did last game, I'm pretty confident they're going to find a way to win that game.
Who's caught the old coach's eye?
Which team?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I tell you, somebody asked me who's going to win the Stanley Cup. I said, I'll tell you after the first round because they're all playing so well, right? Mm-hmm. Philadelphia, really, I give them a ton of credit, but they are big and they're fast and they're coming at you and they don't give Pittsburgh any time or any place. So you got some, when you have size and you have speed and you're pressuring, you are very, very difficult to handle. So Philadelphia is a big surprise and the kid in the net has just been outstanding. Mm-hmm. He has. Ladar has been outstanding. So give him a lot of credit. But that team is big, fast, physical, and they're going to make it life miserable for Pittsburgh tonight.
I'm sorry.
That's like your old pal AV. When Vigneault says, hey, my goaler better than your goaler, I win.
Sometimes, most nights, that's what it's coming down to.
Thanks for grinding your way through the one-on-one with John earlier.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Be good, buddy. There's Rick Bonus. Right, we'll be back to wrap things up on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
I missed when you guys got into the full context of what happened at the end of the season. Did you sense there was any regret?
Yes. And I think he said it when you came back. By the way, how was the? Did you get the FedEx guy everything? Did you have to sign a piece of paper or something?
They knocked while we were still on, and then they went down the street. So I was texting him and came back. So I had to wait like 5 minutes. But she was amazing. She was really good. Apologetic that she had to come back. I'm like, I'm apologizing okay, that you had to come back.
Anyway, so the answer is, I do think when Rick says, it's not as bad as the picture I painted. Mm-hmm. That tells you that, okay, he knows he went a little too far. But you know what? That's, you know, that when you hire a guy like Rick Bonus, when you see the passion of a Rick Bonus, then the way he wants to coach and wants his, the way his teams play, then you have to respect that. What I was impressed with, and I do wonder, because you know lots of NHLers, Darren, you know more than I do. But when teams get eliminated, and I've had friends that play in the game, when teams get eliminated or don't make the playoffs, they don't watch hockey. Some of them disappear, and because they just can't. They can't if they're not playing. They can't watch.
Yeah. Well, fans of teams that are eliminated, they don't keep watching for a round or two. Well,
we've always wanted them to, but they don't.
Yeah.
Anyway,
because they're so hurt.
Can you? So Rick's at home in Florida, and he's watching Philadelphia, you know, pummel Pittsburgh. And now he's texting young guys on the team. Are you watching this game? You better be watching this game. And the guy's homework. Probably, you know, but I'm not even sure the guy's in the country.
But I think it's great coaching.
It's relentless.
I should have asked him if he's ever done that before.
Well, you were here. You could have asked a good question.
I know. I should have asked him if he's.
I'm sure he has. I'm sure he has. I think he communicates with his guys all the time. But always.
How far do you think he moved the schedule up on the Columbus Blue Jackets by doing what he did in that last game versus doing it at training camp next year? Like, did he go from 30 to 90?
Well, as he said, there's nothing wrong with the guys going away for the summer upset.
Yeah.
You know they you know they're now warned about what's the expectation. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Eyes will be on the first 3-4 skates. That will be in two games into the exhibition season after 4 skates next year at the training camp.
Here's the good news. There's only 4 exhibition games this year. So,
but I will be watching closely, and I'll tell you right now, I'm expecting a fight in the first 2 days of skates there.
Well,
there will be.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
It's not a bad thing, guys competing and getting hot and showing the coach that they got his message. That won't be a bad. I'm not looking forward to a fight to beat the hell out of each other. I'm looking expecting a fight because of getting Rick Bonus's message delivered very clearly.
I can understand that. I will say I truly believe that had Matthew Olivier not got hurt. And he got hurt fighting Mark Kastelic in the Bruins in one of those two late Bruin games they played. If Matthew Olivier had not got hurt, I think the Blue Jackets make the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know about that. No offense to Matthew Olivier, but
I'm telling you, he checks a lot of boxes when it comes to intensity, and so I think that you know, and the rest of the team couldn't match that intensity. And there's just. Maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but I really think that's how important Olivier was to that team last year. And I heard it a dozen times during the season, even before.
I don't argue how highly regarded he is and his impact on the team. I just don't know whether when it comes to like making the playoffs or not making the playoffs that one guy. Our best players in the game, John, don't have the impact that we would like them to have on wins and losses.
Not every, well, some do. Some do sometime. I mean, you know, other than goaltenders, I mean, sure they do. I mean, you know, game one.
Who's the best player in the game?
Connor McDavid.
Has he ever won?
Ever won the championship?
Yeah.
No, but he's won lots of games.
Won lots of games, but that's what I mean. Like the best players in the game can't get you there on their own. So Matthew Olivier, who's not the best player in the game.
On your own, okay. Not on their own, but he can inspire. Yeah. He can inspire. He can protect. And there's lots of ways to look at it. I mean, last game one against Anaheim for McDavid was the first time all season long that they won a game. The Oilers won a game without McDavid having a point. Mm. It's amazing.
And they had Leon Draisaitl doing pretty good.
Well, and I'll tell you what, of the two players, Leon was more impactful in game one than Connor was.
Yeah. So you still had,
And by the way, Connor will not be bland two games in a row. Trust
me. How do you think Colorado's feeling right now? They're up 2-0, but they've had to work really hard, and they've been more criticized than LA is right now through two games.
The only way I could put it is I will expect it to be a wake-up call at some point for the Avalanche. You know, a wake-up call to what they have to do. You know, yes, they've won both games 2-1 now. I think it's not a reflection on Colorado. I think it's a reflection on the gap between, you know, the best, allegedly the best team and the least effective team in the playoffs. There isn't much difference between NHL teams, particularly when you can play defense first, as we talked about at the top of the show.
Colorado's just got to look at it. We're up 2-0. They keep all that noise separate.
Right. Yeah. And it's probably good for them to get out of town. I always wonder if you had a choice, if you could start a series on the road, would you? I would prefer it.
American Hockey League has this cool setup where if you're within a certain distance and it's a best of three, you can choose whether to open on the road and have the final two games at home or have the first two games at home and finish on the road.
Yeah.
And the best of five does the same thing, two or three. Do you want to have the first two games on the road and then finish with three? It's a great concept.
Except how do you do it in the NHL?
Well, with TV, it's a big challenge. And arena availability, everything. But I think the team that doesn't have the choice is going to find motivation in however the home ice club chooses. But I think it's a great idea.
See, the only way I would, if you did it, I would say, because I still think the team that finishes higher in the standings should have four home games in a best of seven series. Mm-hmm. So then you go 2-3-1-1. And
I'm okay with 2-3-1-1.
Would you rather have three games at home in a row, games 3, 4, and 5, rather than, you know, 2-2-1-1-1? Save money. But to have three games at home in a row is such an advantage.
When did you become a penny pincher?
You know what? When I see the Toronto Maple Leafs saving money, I have to save money too. Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to save money.
So Portland Trailblazers saving money too.
Well,
they asked some of their staff to check out of their rooms on time because they didn't want to pay for the late checkout time. Some of the staff.
Mr. Dundon.
Yes.
Mr. Dundon, the Dundon effect.
Yeah, I was listening to some sports talk radio in the States, and they're saying, well, he owns a hockey team, so he's got experience in this. I'm like, yeah, go. There's some interesting avenues that Tom Dundon has taken. And I don't think they're all wrong either. I just think he goes against the grain a lot.
Indeed. He goes against the grain. I mean, he asks that unbelievable question that drives everybody who is secure in their job nuts. And it's a one word question. Why?
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 Why? Nobody's ever asked me that.
That's right.
Nobody's
that's
asked me that. thanks for bailing me out on the bones.
Well, you know what? You know, thank goodness the Federal Express people were on time, you know.
So. This is something I needed for my daughter. So I if it was just me, I would have just deliver it later. But this is something I need because I tell them all the time, you got to step up at important times. And if I wouldn't have done this, I would have got skewered. Oh,
you're unbelievable.
You don't want a 19-year-old.
I've had a 19-year-old mad at me.
Did you want her mad at you?
And she's 32 now and she's still mad. So it's okay.
Yeah.
But I have a intense, I have a 62-year-old still mad at me too. So that's okay too.
We'll talk to you next time on 100% Hockey with Millard. Oh, and give us a thumbs up and like. Give us some reaction. What did you think of Bones today? I can't wait to go back and listen to the first part of that. It's 100% Hockey with Millard Shannon. We'll see you next time.